content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, the new game for country clubs. Golf courses and country clubs are making big bets and big changes as they court the next generation of members. We'll start this week, as we usually do, with the biz section. This is written and compiled by managing editor Dane Huffman. Shoe shop owner eyes selling site. A quirky location in Raleigh that dates to 1959 will be changing soon as the owner of a beloved shoe shop looks to retire before long. The Man Murr retail space got its unusual name in that it's halfway between Manteo on the coast and Murphy in the mountains. The one-story building is owned by Stephen Cash, who has been at the Man Murr shoe shop since 1982. The shop is a throwback to when talented cobblers such as Cash would look over your penny loafers and give you a price for repair. Even now, Cash works with an old-fashioned cash register and a written receipt system that feels like something you'd see in Mayberry. But the work, as evidenced by the massive mounds of shoes, is real. I love working. I'd rather be here than be on a fully paid Hawaiian vacation. That's no lie. I love working. I love what I do, he said, but nothing lasts forever. Cash, who's 65, owns a piece of property valued at $1.89 million. He gradually bought out others and became the sole owner in 2021. Cash said he plans to retire and sell within 2 years and maybe sooner, noting that the job requires working Saturdays and long weeks. You have to be here all the time, he said. The Man Murr building also includes another longtime business, the Man Murr Barbershop. That location has been a favorite of NC State University fans for decades, and Wolfpack coaches such as Dave Doran and Elliot Avent often pull up a chair and wait their turn. But Cash knows change is coming. All across Hillsborough Street, structures are getting flattened, and swankier structures are rising. And finding someone to repair shoes as Cash does isn't easy. It'd be like taking me to Wake Med and wanting me to do brain surgery, he said. On Glenwood Avenue, gym to take former furniture space in Raleigh. Couches are out and squat racks are in at a former furniture store. Following last year's closure of Carolina Furniture Direct, Powerhouse Gym has filed permits for the building at 8401 Glenwood Avenue. The gym also lists the address as coming soon on its website, but does not provide an opening date. A new Powerhouse Gym location is also listed as coming soon at 11 Cole Place Road in Chapel Hill. Powerhouse Gym also lists a location in Charlotte. Furniture Direct closed in May after 41 years in business. A permit filed with the city values the renovation of the building at approximately $4.4 million. And Carrie, Asian grocery chain moving into former Lidl. An Asian grocery chain is taking over a former Lidl in Carrie. Go Fresh 365 plans to occupy 35,726 square feet at 2741 Highway 55 in the High House Crossing Shopping Center. Western Wake County's growing Asian population is likely a factor in the company's decision to put a store along the busy Highway 55 corridor. In January, the town approved plans for the grocery store. Construction costs were estimated at $593,750, according to plans submitted to the town. Complete 540 makes progress near Knightdale. The Complete 540 project is getting more visible near Knightdale as crews work to close the 540 loop around Raleigh. Cameron Richards, Eastern Deputy Chief Engineer for the North Carolina Turnpike Authority, said the project is finally getting up out of the ground. Complete 540, which extends the Triangle Expressway to the existing I-540 in Knightdale, is a priority project for the Turnpike Authority, part of the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Crews are working on the final $1.2 billion leg of the long-running project, which is expected to open in 2028. The first phase, which ends at Interstate 40 south of Garner, opened in 2024. Phase 2 extends 540 another 10 miles from I-40 to Knightdale. ex-ambassador sees new book find success. A Raleigh lawyer who's the former U.S. ambassador to Denmark is seeing success as a writer. Jim Kane's book, Reign of Secrets, is a story about how the Prince of Denmark is murdered in the Florida Keys and that deadly game of espionage follows. The book is ranked number 24 in Amazon's historical fiction category. Kane is the former president of the Carolina Hurricanes and led a key effort to beef up the fan base and win the All-Star game for Raleigh. Kane describes the novel as a potent mix of history, mystery, espionage, and conspiracy. Kane is also a co-founder of the Raleigh office of the Kilpatrick Townsend Law Firm and rejoined it in 2009 after serving in Denmark under President George W. Bush. We'll get to the cover story in a little bit, but we do have time for the reporter pages this week. The first one is Manufacturing and Technology, written by Lauren Onosorge. Vulcan Elements closes on funding. Vulcan Elements, a manufacturing startup backed by the federal government that's working to build a rare earth magnet factory in Johnston County, has closed on more than $430.7 million in capital. A securities filing disclosed the equity financing recently, though it did not specifically detail who invested. Brian Van DeMark, head of finance at Vulcan Elements, confirmed the raise is tied to previously announced financing. According to the filing, it's part of a total offering targeted at $545 million, which is about the amount of private capital pledged to secure federal investment. Last year, the company announced a $1.4 billion partnership with the U.S. government, making the nation among its direct stakeholders. $550 million from private backers such as 1789 Capital was to be part of the arrangement. The Department of Defense is now one of Vulcan's largest backers via the $620 million loan that's central to the deal. The U.S. Department of Commerce, under the CHIPS and Science Act, also backed the startup through $50 million in federal incentives. As part of the partnership, the Department of Defense was to receive warrants in both Vulcan Elements and its partner, ReElement Technologies. The U.S. Department of Commerce was to take a $50 million equity stake. The federal government's interest in Vulcan Elements doesn't come without scrutiny, particularly in light of President Donald Trump's son's interest in 1789 Capital. At an oversight and investigation subcommittee hearing on the critical mineral supply chain last month, there was a vote on whether to subpoena Donald Trump Jr. to testify about his financial stake in the firm. The vote didn't pass. Vulcan CEO John Maslin previously told TBGA he had never met Trump Jr. or his father. Vulcan recently bought 56 acres at Cross Point Logistics Center for $8 million, according to deed records. Hitachi Energy expands in Cary. Hitachi Energy is expanding in Cary through a $10 million, 150-job investment driven by the surging demand for energy from artificial intelligence. A Cary operation dubbed the Power Electronics Center of Competence will be a 32,000-square-foot facility at 220 James Jackson Avenue. The site will localize engineering, testing, and system integration to support large-scale energy projects across North America. It will also include restricted access space dedicated to cybersecurity operations as Hitachi Energy works to protect critical infrastructure. The facility should be ready this fall. Urban Strandberg, Vice President, Grid Integration, Marketing, and Sales for North America, said the company, which provides technology for power electronics, substations, and data centers, has watched the market evolve rapidly. "We've seen an increase in this market in general," he said. "It's been going from a very, very niche market in the early 2000s to something pretty big now, and AI data centers specifically are really driving an increase." Hitachi Energy is headquartered in Switzerland. According to the company, U.S. electricity needs are projected to grow 35% to 50% by 2040, putting new pressure on utilities, developers, and the companies that supply them. Locating the facility outside the Triangle, where Hitachi Energy has maintained a long-standing presence at Raleigh Centennial Campus, was never seriously considered, Strandberg said. And finally, in funding, Triangle Startups raised $64 million in March. Triangle Startups raised about $64 million in new capital in the month of March, securities filings show. But they weren't alone, as venture funds executed millions in financing to round out quarter number one. Primordial Ventures of Durham, which invests in early-stage software startups, has raised $3 million of a $12 million round, according to a securities filing. Previously, Primordial operated a rolling fund through Angel List. The fund, which wound down last year, had a low entry point to the tune of $5,000 in hopes of attracting players to the Triangle. By switching to a more traditional fund, Primordial hopes to now amplify its thesis, said Jen Sum, general partner. The plan is to write a slew of discovery checks, those at about $25,000 to $50,000, on super early startups, many less than a year old. About a dozen will snag follow-on investments to maximize the impact, Sum said. Meanwhile, Prudent Growth Fund the Third of Chapel Hill, a fund tied to Thomas Hahn's Prudent Growth Partners, closed on $23.8 million of a planned $56.2 million fund. Ben Tobin brings us the news from the commercial and real estate sector. Sanford moves toward its first target. Lee County just took a big step toward landing its first Target store as the area continues to grow. Business leaders and officials held a groundbreaking ceremony April 1st for the redevelopment of the Riverbirch Shopping Center at 1033 Spring Lane in Sanford. The crown jewel of the $64 million redevelopment project is a store from the Minneapolis retail giant, which will make its debut in Lee County as soon as 2027. The development represents a major retail milestone for Lee County, which has been has seen steady population growth and commercial investments in recent years, but has long lacked many of the national brands found in larger neighboring markets. Local leaders have said landing a Target is a sign of the county's expanding consumer base and growing appeal to national retailers looking to establish a presence in fast-growing communities across the region. Casto, a real estate developer based out of Ohio that is spearheading the project, said it will also bring a new-to-market grocery store as part of the plan. Redevelopment of core assets like Riverbirch will help the community stay competitive, making Sanford better positioned to attract residents, visitors, and businesses in the future, as well as providing the existing community a nicer place to shop, gather, and connect. Shannon Dixon, Executive Vice President for Development and Leasing at Casto, said at the ceremony. In November 2022, Casto purchased the 35-acre shopping center for $10 million. The following year, Casto submitted plans that included demolition and replacement of most structures to include retail, offices, and multifamily. Casto's updated plan contains only the commercial component. Sanford is going places, Sanford Mayor Rebecca Wyhoff-Salmon said during the April groundbreaking. Built in the late 1980s, Riverbirch Corner Shopping Center was once the retail pride of Sanford, with big department stores like Belk and JCPenney. But in recent decades, the shopping center has become blighted. In Nash County, builder charts 92 homes in Rocky Mountain. A home builder that's been active in the Triangle is charting a new subdivision in Rocky Mountain. Adams Homes, based out of Gulf Breeze, Florida, is planning a 92-home subdivision off Raper Drive northwest of downtown. The company spent a little more than $3.1 million for roughly 40 lots, according to Nash County deed records. According to the builder's website, the single-family homes will feature between 3 and 5 bedrooms, 2 to 4 bathrooms, and be between 1,522 and 2,628 square feet. Another single-family subdivision by Adams Homes in Nash County has home prices starting in the mid-$300,000s. The average home value in Rocky Mount is just below $183,000, according to Zillow. The project comes as Rocky Mount continues to work to attract new development despite long-running population and economic challenges. Local economic leaders have pushed for additional housing in recent years as part of a broader effort to stabilize growth. The Rocky Mount area, while not exploding in growth like the core of the Research Triangle, has seen modest population improvements in recent years after decades of declines. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the Rocky Mount metro area has 148,486 residents, a population gain of roughly 4,000 from 2020. In Pitt County, High Point Hotel Group buys lot near ECU. A hospitality group from the Triad might be planning a hotel near East Carolina University. Greenville Hotel LLC, which shares an address with High Point-based CN Hotels, paid roughly $1.5 million last month for about an acre at the intersection of Evans Street and Reed Circle in Greenville, according to Pitt County deed records and North Carolina Secretary of State filings. a site which contains a 2,217 square foot building that was formerly a restaurant sits one block down from ECU. According to CN Hotel's website, it was established in 1994 and owns and manages a portfolio of high-quality hotels throughout the Southeast with brand affiliations such as Marriott, Hilton, Intercontinental Hotels Group, Wyndham Hotels, and Best Western Hotels and Resorts. The group's portfolio includes hotels in Wilmington, Asheville, Greensboro, Raleigh, and elsewhere in North Carolina, as well as in South Carolina, Virginia, Florida, and Tennessee. And finally, in Brunswick County, rental home community sold for $31 million. Florida-based investor has poured tens of millions into acquiring a rental community in North Carolina's fastest-growing county. Four LLCs that list Peter Von Der Ahe, that's A-H-E, maybe A, managing partner at real estate investment firm MFP Capital, purchased the landing at Stone Chimney in Brunswick County for more than $31 million in March, according to deed records. The seller is D.R. Horton, the nation's largest home builder, according to deed records. The single-family rental community is off Highway 17 east of Shalote. It was built in 2024 and features approximately 100 housing units. According to Apartments.com, monthly rental rates in the community range from $1,849 to $2,950. Reporter Kaylee Thompson brings us news from the real estate and development world. Kane eyes another tower at North Hills. Kane Realty Corp. is making moves to continue expanding the North Hills main district after winning zoning approval for taller buildings. The developer has filed site plans for the empty lot adjacent to R.H. Raleigh and the One North Hills office tower along Interstate 440. The plan shows a 15-story building with residential units, ground floor retail, and a parking deck. The building will have 246 units and 18,120 square feet of retail space. Site plans show there will be 39 studios, 107 one-bedroom units, 87 two-bedroom units, and 13 three-bedroom units. 11 of the units will be penthouses. The total apartment square footage for the building is 342,694 square feet, which equals an average unit size of 1,393 square feet. Amenities for the building include a library, garden lounge, game room, and fifth-floor amenity terrace. The rooftop will have a swimming pool, dining area, wet bar, an orangery, which, according to this, is a room for citrus fruit trees, and an amenity deck. The ground-floor retail will be 8 spaces facing Main at North Hills and Center at North Hills Streets. A spokesperson for Kane Realty said the tower will continue the developer's goal of creating spaces that foster connection, walkability, and long-term value. The parking deck will be 5 levels with 584 spaces. The parking levels will be on the southern side of the building facing Interstate 440. The building, including the parking deck, will total 548,175 square feet. It will sit on 1.02 acres at an unaddressed parcel on Lassiter Mill Road. The parcel was part of Kane Realty's rezoning application. It refiled in September for various parcels on Six Forks and Lassiter Mill Roads. The empty lot is now zoned up to 20 stories. It was previously zoned for 5 and 12 stories. As part of the rezoning approved by Raleigh City Council in January, each site's density is capped at the limits of the previous zoning. Boston firm buys industrial park in Garner for $36 million. A Boston private equity firm bought an industrial park in Garner for more than $36 million as the industrial sector remains strong in the Triangle. Rock Point acquired the Garner Commerce Center from Greenberg Gibbons of Maryland for $36.35 million, according to Wake County deed records. The center is a three-building industrial park along Highway 70 east of Interstate 40. The park at 2525 Highway 70 has 128,000 square feet of flex industrial space and is 91% leased to 16 tenants, including United Rentals, Carson Material Handling, and Edge Printed Products. The park opened in 2024 and is assessed at $24.1 million. In Rock Point's press release, it cited the strong demand for industrial space in North Carolina as the reason for the investment. The purchase was part of a larger portfolio where Rock Point also acquired the I-77 Commerce Center in Charlotte from Greenberg Gibbons. Industrial space has been the hottest sector of the commercial real estate market in the Triangle for years, as the region's growth has fueled new construction, while demand has kept vacancy rates in the single digits. South Point area could add more apartments. A Raleigh developer is looking to add hundreds of residential units near the streets at South Point in Durham. Aventon Companies is seeking a zoning map change for 35 acres in Durham to go from residential rural to planned development residential. The company filed a zoning map change application with a graphic development plan with the city of Durham. The zoning change would allow for up to 470 apartments and townhomes for a density of 18 units per acre. Filed plans show there would be 120 for sale townhomes and 350 rental apartments. The townhomes would be three stories, while the apartment buildings would be five stories. Full build-out would be in 2028. The townhomes would be located in the northeast portion of the site, with the apartment buildings on the western side. The southern portion will be a mix of apartments and townhomes. The developer is offering an affordable housing condition for both types of units. For the apartments, 3% will be made available to those earning 80% of the area median income. When it comes to the townhomes, 2% of the products will have a sale price that will be based on the purchasing power of a four-person household that makes 100% or less of the AMI. The final reporter page this week is Retail and Restaurants, authored by Kate Tracy. Retail district rises at Viridia. The roads are built and streetlights will soon illuminate, a crucial piece of the transformative Viridia development in Apex. Dubbed Viridia Crossing, the 100 million retail district will come with 220,000 square feet of retail and office space across 14 to 16 single and two-story buildings. Joe Graziosi Sr., Executive Vice President of Development for RXR, has hired Tiffany Barrier and Charlie Coyne with CBRE to handle retail leasing at Viridia Crossing. Site work has already begun, with vertical construction on schedule to start this summer. The goal is to hand over suites to tenants by August to December 2027 for tenant build-outs, with openings starting in the first half of 2028. There's really not a project that the Triangle's seen like this in a really long time, so I'm super excited to have been able to partner with them on this and really start to kick this off, Barrier said. Viridia Crossing will feature restaurants, soft goods retail, and other amenities for residents of Viridia and the thousands of workers at the future NC Children's Hospital. The retail team wants to land both high-quality dining and fast casual restaurants, athleisure, personal services, local boutiques, and fitness. Fitness brings people in so many different times of the day, and then they linger and they eat and they shop and they do all sorts of stuff. So we view that as an important piece, Barrier said. In addition, the entire Viridia development, which spans more than 1,000 acres between Highways 1, 55, and 540, will eventually include four to five hotels. The retail district will be near the Highway 55 entrance to Viridia, located on the eastern side of the development. A grocery store will be located in the retail district, as well as grab-and-go food and beverage options. In Raleigh, indoor golf venue to open in 2027 at Seaboard Station. Golfers in downtown Raleigh, get ready to lower your handicaps at Seaboard Station. Phil and Nancy Gugliotta, local franchisees of the Swing Bays, have leased 5,800 square feet at 802 Seamart Drive, Suite 118 at Seaboard Station. The indoor golf venue is on track to open in early 2027 and will be the Gugliotta's second location in the Triangle. It checked all the boxes, Phil Gugliotta said of Seaboard Station. We really like the fact that it's on the edge of downtown. You've got a mix of young people, young professionals, and established neighborhoods. It's a family affair for the Gugliottas, whose son Joey will be the general manager at Seaboard Station's Swing Bays. The Gugliottas are also planning to open in Wake Forest this summer, which will be the first out-of-state location for the Colorado-based Swing Bays. After the family's first two locations open, the Gugliottas plan to open three more in the Triangle. Wine Bar takes space of former Carey Brewery. Out with the brewery, in with the wine bar. Vino and Tap has taken over the former Cotton House craft brewer space at 307 South Academy Street by the downtown Carey Park. Drew Schenck, owner and co-founder at cocktail bar Dram and Draft, as one of the operators at Vino and Tap. The wine bar serves champagne, cocktails, curated wines, and draft beer in a warm, welcoming space, according to its social media. Vino and Tap joins a number of other bars in downtown Cary, including the Walk Up, Sidebar, and Bond Brothers Brewery. Cotton House Craft Brewers closed in November, months after filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The popular brewery operated for 6 years, but rising prices have been tough on the industry. Private dining club files for bankruptcy. After nearly 40 years in business, a private dining club in Durham has closed and filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. The University Club of Durham, located in the 11,000-square-foot penthouse on the 17th floor of the University Tower at 3100 Tower Boulevard, ended operations last month. The business filed for bankruptcy, liquidation March 31st, according to court filings. Son Lee Lesak signed the bankruptcy filing. The business reported $76,471 in total assets and $945,589 in total liabilities. Owners Kelly Santel and Jessica Lee said in a release that the pandemic is still being felt by operators in every city and town. The University Club of Durham chose to fight. We restructured, we adapted, we held on because we believed in what this place meant to the people who called it their own, the owner said. We've done everything in our power, as so many proprietors across the country have done, to keep this venerable institution open. Lydia Carpenter with Raleigh-based Hendren Red Wine and Malone is representing the business in its bankruptcy. University Club's revenue was $1,697,848 in 2024 and $1,748,150 in 2025. This year, the club brought in $355,145, the bankruptcy filing show. Triangle Business Journal's cover story this week, country clubs gear up for their millennial moment. Country clubs are betting millions on upgrades designed to attract their next generation of members, but it comes at a cost. The author of this week's cover story is Cameron Snipes. Just when you thought it was expensive to join a private country club in the Triangle, buckle up, it's getting pricier. And some potential members are facing nearly 30% increases. According to the latest research by Triangle Business Journal, 8 of the most prestigious private golf clubs in the area have increased their membership costs this year. Those include Northridge Country Club in Raleigh, Governor's Club in Chapel Hill, Raleigh Country Club, and Crowsdale Country Club in Durham. But those big bets are paying off, as many of these clubs have a line of people waiting to get in. Quite a few even are at or near their membership caps. The most expensive country club in the Triangle remains the golf-focused Old Chatham Golf Club in Durham, where the initiation fee remains unchanged from last year at $100,000. Another one of the area's most expensive clubs is North Ridge Country Club in Raleigh. The club further cemented that status this year with a 20% jump in initiation fees, going from $75,000 last year to $90,000. That's basically been precipitated by how long our wait list is, Director of Golf Scott Kirkland said. Total members at the club number about 1,000, with roughly 940 of those being full golf members, he said. There are about 70 to 75 on the wait list right now, Kirkland said. It's all part of serving a membership base that's willing to pay higher prices for a higher quality of club life. The people moving into the million-dollar homes around the Northridge area are going to want to be a part of this club, Kirkland said. Raleigh-based McConnell Golf is a big player in the regional golf scene, owning 16 courses across 4 states. 4 of those, including Raleigh Country Club, are in the Triangle area. I think golf is in a very sweet spot right now, founder and CEO John McConnell recently said on TBJ's Bottom Line Triangle podcast. We have a lot of full memberships in a lot of our urban clubs right now. Crowsdale Country Club in Durham is also benefiting from golf's continued upswing. The club's initiation fee jumped by more than 28% from last year and now sits at $25,000. General Manager and Chief Operating Officer Mark Johnson said, its current monthly membership dues are just under $800. Private clubs are a value proposition, Johnson said. It's just worth more now. It's worth more due to the reinvestment these clubs are making in their operations, and it's all to entice more members and give them more reasons to engage with the club and the value-added experience they provide. And that reinvestment has also paid off. Croasdale, with revenue of around $6 million now, has grown its total membership base to 500. And we're now a net 19 ahead in membership growth, Johnson said. Other than a greens renovation in 2001 to 2002, the club hadn't gone through any type of notable renovation in more than 25 years. When Johnson became the GM in 2014, the club had a total of 350 members, he said. A big push to renovate came 4 years later when the bar and dining area got revamped. We started seeing a net gain in membership at that point, Johnson said. In 2023, the member-owned club voted for another round of renovations. The winter of 2023 to 24 saw a renovation of its bunkers, and the second phase was the total rebuild of its pool and pool house. The pool was gone all of last summer, which was tough for our members. We just got off the certificate of compliance for it on March 25th, and we'll be opening the new pool and pool house in May. Four pickleball courts were also added and opened in November. All told, those renovations, including the revamped bunkers, came at a cost of $6.1 million, Johnson said. We used the pool as a gateway to the club, he said. Membership is getting much younger. The average member age at Croasdale CC has dropped by 10 years, now at 58, Johnson said. Kirkland, who's worked at Northridge Country Club for nearly 25 years, says he's noticing members are using the club much more now and using it in different ways than in the past. It's a different member now, he said. People are using it differently in all facets, not just golf. And their expectations are higher. Like Croasdale, the membership base at Northridge is getting younger. I'd say our largest demographic is between the ages of 0 and 6, Kirkland quipped, adding that a large portion of their membership base is made up of families. It's gone from a weekend club to more of a weekday club, he said. Those higher expectations and changing membership makeup are the impetus for its most recent capital improvements, which include its revamp of the entire lower level of the clubhouse. Over the past 3 to 4 years, the club has gone through various upgrades, including building a new wellness center, constructing 3 golf simulator bays with a bar, and a new cart barn and bag room. The entire investment totaled around $20 million, Kirkland estimated, which was funded in part by an assessment, loans, and higher dues, he said. What's ahead for Northridge? The 36-hole club is looking at a renovation of its lakes course, a new agronomy building, and a new youth activity area, Kirkland posited. It's all an effort to serve a population that clearly has an appetite for club life. Northridge currently sees 50,000 to 55,000 rounds of golf played per year, Kirkland said. The increased fees are a national trend as well. A survey of hundreds of country clubs by Club Benchmarking, a provider of private club-specific business intelligence tools and services, found clubs are planning a median 5% operating dues increase in 2026. That 5% projected growth matches the 5% median increase seen between 2024 and 2025, but it's down significantly from the 9% operating dues growth seen from 2022 to 2023. And demand for access to clubs in general remains strong nationally. In September, about 35% of surveyed clubs said they had more members than at the same time in 2024, while 40% said they had the same number, and just 25% said they had fewer members than the year before, according to Club Benchmarking. Meanwhile, 45% of clubs had a wait list in 2025, the same as in 2024, and only slightly less than the 47% that reported a wait list in 2023 and the 49% that reported having a wait list in 2022. In 2019, before the pandemic, just 25% of country clubs had a wait list, according to Club Benchmarking's data. It's a story that's certainly playing out in the Triangle, a place most local industry insiders think could use more places to play the game of golf. This is just a structure of the Raleigh market, Kirkland said. This market is still well underserved, in my opinion. I think it's a very healthy sport, McConnell said. People are finding out it's a lifetime sport. This week's Viewpoint article is from frequent contributor John Hood. Hospitals can't win every policy battle. North Carolina's hospital sector has one of the most effective teams of strategists, lobbyists, and marketers in the state. Still, under present circumstances, I'd be flabbergasted if hospitals emerge from the next 18 months without one or more significant policy losses. You'll find North Carolina's hospitals and the sprawling networks of physician practices, clinics, urgent cares, and other facilities they own or manage at or near the center of many political controversies. Take the state budget. For years, hospitals were among the loudest proponents of Medicaid expansion and helped convince former NC House Speaker Tim Moore and soon-to-be former Senate leader Phil Berger to go along. Critical to the resulting deal was a new set of charges on hospital bills, supposedly to pay North Carolina's share of Medicaid expansion, that were in fact a means of evading the cost. In last summer's federal reconciliation bill, Congress placed hard limits on such creative accounting. Now the clock is ticking. Sometime during the next couple of years, the General Assembly must either chip in billions of state dollars or let Medicaid expansion disappear. More generally, medical costs continue to soar, straining public and private budgets alike. Nationwide, health care expenditures rose 7.2% in 2024. The subcategory of hospital spending grew faster, 8.9%, than physician and clinical services, 8.1%, and prescription drugs, 7.9%. Here in North Carolina, healthcare spending grew by an average annual rate of 6.5% from 1991 to 2020, faster than the nation as a whole, which was 5.7%, and every other state in the Southeast. Spending within North Carolina hospitals also outpaced the region and nation. Reformers have long sought to tame hospital costs by introducing more competition, using a standard Herfindahl-Hirschman index for assessing market concentration. A team of Yale University researchers recently ranked North Carolina second only to West Virginia in the Southeast in hospital concentration and the 12th most concentrated state in the country. This is actually worse than it appears because nearly all the higher-ranked states are small or sparsely populated, conditions that tend to reduce the number of potential competitors. Among America's most populous states, and North Carolina sticks out like a sore thumb. The share of our hospitals located in monopoly or near-monopoly markets is 71.2%. It's 61.7% in Georgia, 50% in Pennsylvania, 47.4% in Michigan, and below 40% in New York, Texas, Florida, Illinois, Ohio, and California. Even in states that continue the archaic process of requiring hospitals to get state permission to enter new markets, North Carolina is another outlier. As of 2023, it subjected 25 medical services to such certificate of need regulation. New York and Georgia regulated 22, Michigan 19, Illinois 15, Florida 6, and Ohio only 1. Such constraints on competition are no more in Texas, California, and Pennsylvania. Finally, North Carolina House and Senate committees are currently studying potential reforms of our sales and property taxes. North Carolina's nonprofit hospitals are fully exempt from property taxes, for example. Other states aren't so generous. On these and other matters, hospitals will defend themselves. They'll doubtless win some battles, but I doubt they'll win them all. John Hood is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. He can be reached at jhood, J-H-O-O-D, at johnlocke, L-O-C-K-E, .org. This week's executive voice feature is about Crystal Rowe, who's the general manager of the Durham Bulls. Crystal Rowe majored in political science at UNC Chapel Hill, but her real passion has always been sports. Growing up, she worked for the Hickory Crawdads minor league team, and even in Chapel Hill, she spent spring breaks roaming around spring training. For 18 years, she honed her sports skills, rising up the ranks at the Carolina Panthers organization. She joined the Durham Bulls in 2023 as assistant general manager and was promoted to interim GM to the position full-time in October. TBJ had some questions. What's the first job you ever had? Scooping ice cream and selling hats for the Hickory Crawdads. What sparked your interest in baseball? It's hot dogs, ice cream, and the sounds of summer. Who wouldn't love it? I've always had a love of the can't-replicate moments that only sports and our sports teams can bring, from spending way too many hours watching the Sports Center before social media to using spring break to catch as many spring training games as possible in college, and I've been fortunate to spend nearly my entire career working in sports. What are your main goals for the coming season? Our goal each season is to focus on the small things that make a big impact by challenging ourselves to make the fan experience just 1% better every single game. At the same time, I'm committed to supporting our team behind the scenes, helping them find purpose in their work and take steps toward their own career goals. What are your primary challenges? Balancing a rich history with continued relevance. That includes honoring the legacy of the club and the recognition that came from Bull Durham, while also connecting with new generations who may not have had that same reference point. From a fan experience standpoint, the challenge and opportunity is meeting the needs of a very diverse audience that ranges from the diehard baseball fan tracking the game on a scorecard to families looking for a fun night out to younger fans who engage in faster, more digital first ways. What's something you learned about the Bulls that you didn't know? I knew coming in that minor league baseball required long hours and a lot of hustle, but you don't truly understand it until you live it. How did your 18 years with the Carolina Panthers prepare you? That time taught me that success is built on strong relationships with your fans, the ability to adapt when the unexpected happens, and surrounding yourself with a great front office team that wins no matter what the outcome on the field. How do you connect with fans? The key is simple. The fan has to come first. You have to truly listen, not just to what fans are telling you, but also to what they aren't saying. With the Durham Bulls, the mindset drives everything we do. We place a strong emphasis on feedback, including post-game surveys that go out to every attendee. Internally, we have a guiding principle: make it easy to be a Bulls fan. What is a lesson that has helped you? One lesson that has stuck with me came from a longtime baseball leader who told me, "Sometimes you have to play for the tie." It's a reminder that not every decision is about winning big. Sometimes it's about staying steady, making the right call in the moment, and putting your team in the best position for the long run. At the end of the day, it always comes back to the people you're surrounded by, and I'm lucky to be part of a group that makes it more than just a job. It's a family. Is there something special that you keep on your desk? A few meaningful reminders from different chapters of my career and life. My credential from Super Bowl 38, a memento from the Brothers of the Sun concert at Bank of America Stadium in 2012, and a baseball from my first game with the Durham Bulls. I also keep my headphones nearby for when I need to reset with a good playlist, and photos of family and friends who keep everything in perspective. And Dane Huffman is the writer who interviewed Crystal Rowe. She's from Hickory, and she has a BA in political science from UNC Chapel Hill. Raleigh's Pendo slashes 10% of its workforce. Despite Pendo's fast growth, the firm is cutting staff as IPO is still possible. Lauren Onosorge provides this story. Pendo, the fast-growing tech unicorn many have been eyeing as an IPO target, is laying off 90 employees, an account that includes 30 workers at its Raleigh headquarters downtown. The move represents about 10% of Pendo's workforce, according to the company, which is headquartered at the 301 Hillsborough building. Following the cuts, Pendo said it has approximately 800 employees. In an email to TBJ, Pendo CEO Todd Olson said, "The firm has been in the process of refounding Pendo over the past 6 months as the technology landscape has changed around us." "This is not any reflection of the strength of our business," Olson said. "We have the biggest opportunity in Pendo history ahead of us. We're setting ourselves up to move at a faster speed to capitalize on it." Pendo develops product management and testing software that helps companies such as Cisco and United Airlines better understand how their customers use their websites and apps. Olson said that in order to support corporate clients that include some of the largest companies in the world, these operational changes are necessary to help us move faster and meet their needs as they transform. Scott Berg, an analyst with Needham & Company who covers Pendo competitors such as Amplitude, said companies in Pendo's space have faced mounting pressure to accelerate faster using AI technologies. "Effectively, there's a lot of concern, skepticism about how an existing vendor will be able to pivot their platform and leverage these technologies effectively, he said. Pendo said the cuts occurred across most departments. U.S. employees were notified via email, and we started a consultation process with employees outside the U.S., a spokesperson said. Pendo was founded in 2013. By 2021, it had $2.6 billion valuation. By 2022, it had its name on a new high-rise in downtown Raleigh on Hillsborough Street. The TBJ's weekly series, 52 Shades of Success, The Impact of AI, is ongoing. This week's episode, Inside Nursing's AI-Powered Future. North Carolina Central University saw 96% of its BSN graduates pass the nursing licensure exam on their first try in 2024 to 2025, the year after AI became a critical component of their education. Connie Gentry is the writer of this article. AI isn't here to replace nurses, but it may help address the nursing shortage. At NC Central University, the nursing school offers a glimpse into the future where AI-enhanced education is preparing the next generation of nurses. NCCU began virtual reality clinicals in the summer of 2024 and added an AI-enhanced immersive learning room in August of 2025. It then elevated its VR clinicals with conversational AI, which enables nursing students and their virtual patients to talk with one another in real time. All of this contributed to notable success for NCCU's BSN graduates in the 2024 to 2025 academic year. Graduation from nursing school is step one, but entering the workforce requires passing the NCLEX licensure exam, which measures a nurse's ability to think critically and make the right decisions. AI-powered VR training at NCCU prepares nursing students to do just that by emulating healthcare settings via simulated real-time interaction. Our students learn how to think critically as they do patient assessments and make decisions, said Director of Experiential Learning Tina Scott. In VR clinicals, they're learning therapeutic communication, how to delegate appropriately to others on their team, and how to multitask across the interruptions that happen in a hospital. Other patients buzzing for care, a doctor calling, or lab results coming in. Jasmine Locklear, a student in NCCU's accelerated BSN program, experienced the AI-powered VR clinical for the first time during a recent interview with Triangle Business Journal. Wearing the VR headset, she went through the same process virtually that are done in a hospital setting, reviewing charts and labs to determine whether to prioritize a patient who was severely dehydrated or one scheduled to be discharged but experiencing moderate pain post-op. Her virtual patients came with their own unique personality traits and answered and initiated conversation as freely as a human might. It mirrors what they do in a hospital, and we can scaffold their learning, start them with two patients, then add a third patient and a fourth when they get to the advanced level, Scott said. The patient acuity also continues to scaffold up as the students matriculate through the program. Alexis Salgado Cervantes, NCCU's simulation operations specialist, is in the room to help if there are any technical difficulties, and faculty can view how the student manages the clinical and then discuss any areas that need to be addressed after the session is completed. In the nearby immersive interactive room, students can experience more than 2,000 medical training scenarios with images and graphics projected onto the walls for a 3D sensory session. Visuals can be augmented with environmental features that nurses might encounter in a situation. Smoke piped into the room to simulate an accident, the smell of burning rubber, noises from first responders or a crowd, or the smells associated with hospitals. Associate Professor of Nursing Janice Collins McNeil said the immersive interactive room reinforces three courses, pathophysiology, adult health, and pharmacology. We cover content in the classroom and then bring students in here to bring the content alive, she said. One of the sessions puts the students in the midst of a Code Blue event in an emergency department where they perform CPR, respond in the moment to fluctuations in the patient's vitals, and ultimately transition the patient from the ED to the intensive care unit. Moving a patient and students in virtually immersive settings requires little effort, nothing more than dialing in another scenario to change the walls and interactive features to those of an ICU room and maybe switching out some props. The Code Blue ED scenario is one of the many created in-house at NCCU in response to faculty requests. I used AI to generate this video after Dr. Collins McNeil gave me the script for the case study, said Michael Render, an IT support technician. For topics such as pathophysiology, which Collins McNeil says is perhaps the most critical course because it helps students understand the source of a disease and the body's cell structure, AI is used to create corresponding case studies and interactive hotspots that students turn to for more detailed discussion. We use AI to do the voiceover cues, so whenever the students interact with the hotspot, it brings up the text and AI reads the descriptions that are on the screen, Render said. Haley Turner, a junior at NCCU in her first year of nursing school, said immersive interactive sessions have helped her retain information and learn more quickly, especially when we're doing something like the Code Blue session where it's all right in front of you. Our instructors use the immersive room and things like the Jeopardy game to solidify what they taught us in class lectures. We click on a hotspot for topics, and it's like self-quizzing, helping us understand better. What she appreciates most is that it makes the learning experience feel psychologically safe. If an answer is wrong, you can try again, so it's a safe environment to learn in, Turner said, and that gives her confidence for when she goes into healthcare settings with humans. Collins McNeil is also using the room for a community health assessment project that's looking at a social determinants of health in the community and what residents have access to say that may be healthy like fresh produce or not healthy like tobacco products. Before, epidemiology studies that my students do would have been a paper report. Now it's a visual report and it takes the whole class into the community, she said. For the project, Locklear took pictures of neighborhoods about a mile north of the NCCU campus. I could describe what I saw, but instead I showed it, Locklear said. Using Google Maps, I dropped my class into our community and projected the street view of everything I researched on the walls in the immersive room. We could virtually walk down Fayetteville Street and see the food line that is the only source of fresh produce. Further investigation revealed higher rates of chronic kidney disease, type 2 diabetes, and stroke, as well as the average age of death at 72.8 years compared to the countywide life expectancy of over 79 years. The project helped fuel her passion for community health. A lot of nurses are transitioning from bedside to community health, and most of my colleagues in nursing school, and I want to practice in community settings because our goal isn't to treat you when you get to the hospital, it's to prevent you from getting there at all. After the National Council of State Boards of Nursing launched its Next Gen Nursing Project in April 2023, the NCLEX exam was updated to better evaluate the ability of newly licensed nurses to make complex decisions while caring for patients. The impact of this shift was reflected across BSN graduates taking their licensure exam in 2025. The first-time pass rate nationally dropped from 92% in 2024 to 88% in 2025. The pass rate in North Carolina fell from 94% to 89% year over year. An exception to this trend was NCCU graduates, whose first-time pass rate went from 94% in 2024 to 96% the year after AI became a critical component of their education. About this project, 52 Shades of Success, The Impact of AI explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses that are trying to leverage the capabilities of artificial intelligence with an eye on combating bias in its functionality. We'll focus on AI's impact on various areas of business and life. UNC Health loses bid for new Asheville Hospital. This article by Zach Izzon. UNC Health's plans to expand in western North Carolina have been thwarted for now. The state has denied the health system's efforts to develop a $711 million hospital in the Asheville area. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services instead approved two proposals from competing health systems. In October, UNC Health filed a certificate of need application to develop a 129-bed hospital called UNC Health West Medical Center. The move would have marked a major expansion beyond the Triangle, giving the health system a foothold in a growing and aging region. Any appeal would need to be filed by April 27th. UNC Health said it is reviewing its options. We're proud of our UNC Health West proposal and believe it's the best approach to serve the future needs of Western North Carolina and its fast-growing community, UNC Health spokesperson Alan Wolf said in a statement. We're reviewing the CON decision and will determine the best next steps, including a possible appeal. His proposal included a seven-floor facility with medical, surgical, imaging, and emergency services, along with adult acute care beds. Plans called for a 28-bay emergency department, 20 inpatient psychiatric beds, and 4 neonatal beds, as well as additional ancillary and support services. DHHS denied UNC Health's application and one from Advent Health, which proposed adding 129 acute care beds to its planned hospital in Weaverville. The agency instead approved Mission Health to add 95 beds to its main hospital in Asheville and approved Novant Health to develop a new 34-bed facility in Arden, which is south of Asheville. According to project review documents published by Asheville Watchdog, DHHS found UNC Health's proposal to be, quote, not approvable, unquote, and therefore did not compare it with competing applications. UNC Health's projections assumed that an average of 15.8% of patients would come from Henderson County, located immediately south of Asheville in Buncombe County, during the first 3 years of operation. Regulators questioned whether those patients would travel to UNC Health West Medical Center, given that UNC Health Pardee, located in Henderson County, is not operating at full capacity and that Advent Health Hendersonville also operated a nearby hospital. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.